It's time for Real Money with David Holland. Because David isn't just a radio personality, but also provides financial advice to clients, we must pause for a word from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation. An engagement of services to be offered are only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. And now for the man who doesn't preach about cutting up credit cards, doesn't waste your time talking about which razor blades to buy, won't tell you to sell everything you own and buy gold, or ever use big words to impress you and talk over your head. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Holland.
Welcome to the big show. We've got good stuff to talk about today. Let's get to it, Lisa.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
And David, here to translate stuff when Scott starts talking about, what are those, Sortino.
Semi-deviations,
yeah,
and Sortinos.
Yeah, start talking about Sortino ratios.
And ulcer indices.
Well, I think everybody knows what's an ulcer index.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're giving me heartburn.
No ulcer today.
All right.
No ulcer for Thursday's market.
All right.
A day after the worst day of the year, we logged the best day of the year. Dow up 123 points, S&P up almost 15, NASDAQ up 44, Golden Oil both flat. Glad to see that. On pretty decent volume today, so a good encouraging day today. Futures
so took back all of the loss of, what, like 90 points and then got another 30, 40 points on top of it. That's good.
Yeah, 97 points the previous day, so pretty good stuff there, and it was a very broad-based rally. The breadth, which we never talk about, but I like the breadth. The breadth was 3-1, meaning for every declining stock, there were three stocks that gained.
That's very good.
Yeah, that's good, because especially with an index like the Dow, a price-weighted index of only 30 stocks, if IBM has a really, really good day, it can tell you that it's a good day in the market when maybe it isn't. So a 3-1 breadth is pretty good. I like that.
I'll take those odds all day week.
Yep. More nonsense out of Greece. It seems like the market really thinks that Greece is a long-term chronic problem rather than a short-term acute problem, and they're treating it that way. So when news comes out, they say, well, that's not so great, but there's no more panic like we saw in August, September.
So they're basically putting it on the back burner.
Yeah, I think at this point they really are. There is a story out that's going to be published overnight in a German newspaper that says, I just love this. This is so hypocritical. The European Central Bank is going to swap out some of their bonds that they own, some of their Greek bonds. They're basically just going to swap them out for longer-term bonds, so Greece doesn't have to pay the ECB a great big payout.
Okay.
But they're getting more in face value of bonds than they actually bought in the first place. So they're telling all these private bondholders, you got to take a big cut, got to take a big cut, got to take a big cut. But when it comes to their bonds at the European Central Bank, well, we make a little profit. It's just a little one.
So they're taking what they would get in interest and they're wrapping it up and refinancing for them.
They're refinancing with no haircut.
And we'll refinance the closing costs and your fees and everything. We'll give you 105% on your loan.
Yeah, they're refinancing with no haircut and demanding the private investors take a very, very large haircut. Aggravating to me.
Doesn't make any sense.
It does not. Domestically, in economic news, some pretty good economic news today. Again, much of it in the right direction, but not quite with the velocity that we're looking for. Thursdays always gives us the new unemployment benefits claims for the week. Fell by 13,000 to 348, lowest level since March of 2008.
Very good.
You like that?
I like that. You know, real quick before I forget, you mentioned, you know, one thing about Greece too. I think a lot of people, they're soaking up and kind of getting a perspective, is that the Greek economy is only 2% of the overall Eurozone economy.
That's right.
So maybe it's just that there's just was so much attention paid that people are kind of getting used to the concept.
Well, and the other thing is that since all this time has passed, since we thought it was going to be an acute problem, banks have had the opportunity to write down their assets and put buy more insurance and put all these things in place so that nobody should be taken by surprise at this point.
And the biggest thing that they're worried about, which is kind of where why it can't come off the burner, it's going to go on the back burner, is they're concerned about something happening with Portugal or Ireland.
Ireland,
or, you know.
Yeah. Portugal, probably the foremost of those.
Okay.
Other good news from home, Philadelphia Federal Reserve Manufacturing Index rose to 10.2, better than expected. We like that. Housing starts up 1.5%. And I know you want to talk about a consumer confidence, the weekly number that we get.
That sounds good.
So the consumer confidence number that we get now is a weekly number. The one that we're talking about right now, it comes from Bloomberg. And I'm going to tell you a terrible number. It's negative 40-something. Let me get my page out here, which is actually good news. That's higher than it's been in quite some time. It's been below minus 40 since February of 2011, averaged negative 46 for 2010. But it has been on the uptick lately and is now down to negative 39.
So you're telling me that's good news?
Yeah, the way they do this is they take 250 random surveys and they basically say, how do you feel about the market in three different places? And if they say they feel negative, then it's negative. If they feel positive, then it's positive. So in order for it to be 100% positive, every person they survey would have to say, I feel good about everything. In order for it to be 100% negative, every person has to say, I'm totally negative about everything. The number is always in the middle somewhere.
Okay. Well, there is positive, and I think that's what people need to know, is there are some positive stuff happening here. Your core producer price index has gone up, which is showing some greater demand.
Yep.
And we're seeing jobless claims start to drop some more. So let's take a quick break. We'll come back, and we'll continue our discussion about where we are now and what you need to be thinking about as you look at your financial future. Stick around.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read. You'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Okay, we are back, and before the break, we're talking to Scott about economic numbers, what's going on. Jobless claims are down. Want to talk about that? Hey, Lisa, let's break it down.
Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
So, jobless claims down, good number.
Actually, a better number than even the most enthusiastic analysts had predicted.
348,000. Yep. Unemployment claims, that's the lowest level since March of 08.
Yeah, down 13,000. And again, a decent number, but it needs to be three or four times that.
I know. It's just not going to be enough. It's going to take forever. Well, not forever. 13, 14, 15 years.
Half of forever.
Yeah, half of forever. It seems like forever in the financial world.
Yeah, but sentiment is getting better. Part of that consumer confidence figure that we talked about from our friend Mr. Bloomberg, part of that survey is asking people how they feel about their chance to find a job. So the sentiment among those not employed has also taken a pretty big jump up. So that's good news. And the worst affected of this recession have been folks that have less than a high school degree. The unemployment rate with those folks is really, really high.
But they're sounding more optimistic now.
Most optimistic since December of 2010. Okay. So that's good.
So they're thinking that if they don't have a job, that their prospects and the polling says that they think they'll get a job.
Yes. It says they think their chances of getting one are better anyway.
Well, you know what? You know who might be thinking about getting a new job are the folks that do all the credit ratings.
Okay? Yeah.
There's a report out that, listen to this, Moody's, which is one of the credit agencies, that and they do a lot of rating of all the different... What do they rank? They rank financial companies.
They rank publicly traded companies.
Okay.
So like General Electric has a credit rating. Financial service, they rank sovereign debt.
Okay, so it's where debt, mostly debt ratings then.
That's right.
It's not about their whether you should buy their stock or not. We're not talking about that. That's a stock or an analyst rating.
Yeah, now S&P does have a component of that, but Moody's is pretty much strictly debt.
Okay, so Moody's is saying this is a, this debt is safe or not, basically, or different shades of safety.
Right.
So they've got a report out that they are that Moody's is talking about needing to downgrade 100 global and or European financials, meaning financial companies.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, eh, okay. Everybody kind of shrugs.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think after we went through the whole mortgage thing, everybody said, well, where was Moody's to not tell us that these bonds that everybody's been ranking as AAA were really nothing more than maybe double B at best? And then, you know, we got down, the United States got downgraded, and everybody's like, what are you talking about? Nobody can pay their bills better than we can. So they definitely have lost a lot of credibility in the last couple of years.
Well, that is very interesting to see how that plays out. You know, something else that I thought was interesting I ran across in talking through some of this. One of the things that we, of course, talk about, I talk about, is we got to get our country, we need accelerated growth, and that's how we're going to work on that unemployment. I ran across this, and we had talked about the OECD. That's an organization that is for economic cooperation and development. Basically, it's the big developed countries.
Yes.
Okay. And the average corporate tax rate from 2000 to 2010 has gone from 33% down to 26%.
This is U.S. tax rate or this global?
Global tax. This is the average of all the developed countries, basically. The big countries around the world, the average has gone from 33% in 2000 to 26% in 2010.
Yeah.
United States pretty much been 39% all along the while for state and federal.
Yeah.
So part of our challenge in order to compete globally and to grow our country, our taxes have stayed at 39%. And everybody else, to make themselves more competitive, they brought those tax rates down.
Yeah, well, that does seem to be the one thing that politicians can agree on, is that they need to bring the corporate tax rate down. They just can't agree on how to do it.
It's not helping. You know, you look at the spending that we have, and that's our, you know, I keep coming back to this. Our problem or challenge, I don't think it's a tax problem. I don't think it's a revenue problem. I think it's a spending problem. Look at that. Listen to this, ladies and gentlemen. Our federal spending grew by more than 10 times the rate of growth for median income in this country.
That's
so,
a lot.
Our median income and our household income, it's grown. Total federal spending since 1970 has grown 300%. It's tripled. Median household income was $40,000 in 1970, and it's $50,000 in 2009. I mean, Scott's like, yeah, what do you want from me over there? What do you want from me? I mean, I'm not going to fix that. Well, but this is where we are. We you know, all these politicians telling us what to do and how they're going to solve our problems. Well, you want to solve our problem? You need to fix the spending and grow the country. All right. Take a short break. We'll be right back.
What if the process of creating your financial plan was easy, hassle-free, and straightforward? What if it was conducted by a friendly professional and there was nothing expected of you in return? It almost sounds too good to be true, right? It's the way David Holland has been doing business at his firm, Holland Financial, for over 15 years. Since day one, it has been David's mission to provide individuals with practical solutions for their retirement needs. Financial planning doesn't have to be complicated or stressful. To learn more about our services, visit us at hollandfinancial.com or call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your complimentary consultation. That number again is 888-747-7526.
The following top secret message is ready for declassification.
Hey, have you wondered where stocks come from and what in the world an IPO is? Well, I'm going to share with you on this segment a little bit about that. With all the talk in the news about Facebook's going to go public, they're going to do an IPO, or we hear about some of these other technology companies going through an IPO process, you scratch your head and say, I don't really know what that is, and I don't want to say anything and sound like I don't know what I'm talking about or for people to think I'm dumb. So I'm going to tell you exactly what these things are all about, and so that you now will know and say, oh, yeah, you know, I was looking at this IPO the other day, and I'm thinking of doing this, I'm thinking of doing that, and, you know, you'll be with it. So IPO, initial public offering, and what that means is it is the first time a company is traded publicly, meaning that the general public can buy shares in the company. Now, where do these public companies come from? Well, they all come from a company that's privately held, owned by an individual or a group of individuals who then decide they want to grow the company by getting additional money and using that to finance their growth, as opposed to using debt, which some companies also, of course, use. Or they want to cash in. You know, they've grown the company, they've built it up, and they say, okay, you know, our company's worth X amount. I've listened to David Holland talk on his radio show that we shouldn't have all of our money in one company and that we should be diversified. So we're going to go public and we're going to be able to get the cash out and put our money into other companies as well. Or go buy that little villa in Italy or whatever they want to do. So this is a fairly regular and steady thing. It fluctuates year to year, but we've seen, might see as low as 50 or 30. You know, 2008, when the market was having a very difficult year, about 30 companies went public. Better years, 2007, 2004, over 200 companies went public. So it varies. Projected 2011, our most recent year, about 125 companies went public. They raised a total of $36 billion. So it's a fairly common, but it's a big deal. And so we've heard about Facebook and some of the other companies that may be going public. So I wanted to share that with you because it's usually involving a company wanting to expand. And let me give you an example. I'll pull this right from my book. I made a fictitious company called Martin Toy Company. And Jim Martin started the company. And let's just say he's grown and he's got stores in Florida and he's trying to build his company. He's had success, but now he says, you know, I'd like to take it nationwide, but I've got to have the capital to do that. So let's say he wants to raise money for expansion, and he decides that, you know what, instead of owning 100% of a small company, I'd like to own 20% of a large company. You know, I'll have more, it'll be worth it. I'll make more money that way, and I'll have better leverage. And so he decides to sell shares of his company to the public. Well, he hires a company to help him do that. Underwriters or companies that can advise him, and they can advise how to go through this process. And that's where he's going to file the appropriate documentation and submit that to the Securities and Exchange Commission, and he'll get the money to then expand. Now, once you go public, the company is responsible for filing appropriate documents with the Securities and Exchange Commission quarterly. So there's an accountability, and also accountability to the shareholders that are allowed to have access to the information of a privately held company now that's public. And the other thing is now that stock trades between different people. And so let's say the stock starts out at $20 a share, and if there's a lot of people that want the stock, well, then the stock gets bid up like an auctioneer, but it's done through brokers, and the stock may go from being worth $20 a share up to $30 or $40 or $50 a share. And then the other way around is, let's say that company doesn't do well. Maybe they run into a new competitor, or they have some other problem, or there's a management shakeup, whatever it is, then the stock could fall in value. One of the things to remember with individual stocks is you have a double layer of risk. You have what we call the market risk, or the systemic risk of the market itself, where the overall market, if there's bad news, the overall market can go down. But you also have the individual risk. And so these are things to keep in mind when you're looking at stocks. But you now know where individual stocks and publicly traded stocks come from. IPO. Stick around.
Creating a world with less cancer takes a team effort. It takes survivors and caregivers and regular folks like you and me who all unite at Relay for Life. This year, nearly 4 million people nationwide will come together to celebrate, remember, and fight back. We're the American Cancer Society, the official sponsor of birthdays. Visit us at relayforlife.org.
If you like what you hear, you'll love what you see. Watch Real Money with David Holland, the TV show, Mondays at 12:30 on WESH Channel 2, starting February 20th.
Okay, we're back. And you know what? I'm going to give you a little, I always promise not to use big words. And so I'm going to give you a quick definition. Wikipedia has a nice little definition of systemic risk. In finance, systemic risk is the risk of a collapse in an entire financial system or the overall market, as opposed to the risk associated with an individual company. Actually, if you've got an individual company, it's in addition to the systemic risk. Now, systematic risk is something completely separate and different. So they're not the same. Systematic risk is market risk or aggregate risk, and it's about the overall market. So those, they sound similar, a little different, but the point is that, number one, I'm not going to use any big fancy words, but the other is that you have a risk that is the whole market, and individual stocks carry an additional risk on top of that. One other thing real quick is retirement. I'm always thinking and working and talking to people about their retirement. Are you expecting to retire or are you already retired? What do you think about retirement? Well, USA Today had a snapshot out about when do people expect to retire? And that has changed. And it is really, what's interesting is the number of people that are shifting their thinking. It used to be a lot of people expected to retire by 62, 65. Well, there's about 7% that expect to retire before 60. There are over 50% look to retire between 60 and 69. Now, that doesn't surprise me. What was interesting is that the 25% expect to retire after 70, and then there's another 14% that expect never to retire. So a lot of people are rethinking retirement. I don't know if that's a good or bad thing. I hope it's a good thing that people are being a little bit more realistic. I've met with people and talked to them about their finances, and sometimes I have to say, look, you need to work one more year, you need to work five more years, something's got to give, you've got to figure it out. One of the things that I look at when I'm working with people is how they can get to where they are and where they need to be. And I have a story to share with you of somebody that I met with recently that is that asked to talk to me about their finances, and I met with them and we looked at their situation, and so much of what we hear right now in the news and the media is that, you know, it's all about who's to blame, right? I mean, it's all about, you know, it's somebody else's fault. And I don't know, maybe it's just a normal, have we been conditioned? Have we been trained this way that this is always somebody else's fault by the constant messages we hear? Or is it maybe just part of being human that we have a hard time accepting responsibility for what's going on? And the story I was going to share with you just briefly is, I'll change the name of the person. We'll call her Joan. It's not a real name, but Joan came in to see me. She knew she needed to make some changes to her finances and make sure she was on the right track. She had a broker. She wasn't happy with the performance. She knew she needed to do something different. She just wasn't sure what. I did an analysis. I did that 19-point inspection I talk about. I figure out the things that were working, the things that were not. And we put a plan together. We developed how she can move forward. She wanted to have a more reliable income. She wanted some flexibility. She needed to maintain growth for inflation. A lot of the things that are very important for a retirement plan. What she did not do, which I was very happy to see, she didn't blame anybody. She accepted the fact that there were some disappointments with the investments, but she didn't say, you know, woe is me. She didn't say, golly, it's the, you know, that 1%'s fault. You know, I'm going to go pick up my Occupy whatever and protest. She was self-determining. She said, I need to do something about my situation. First, do I need to work? Do I need to go back to work? I need to take care of myself. What do I need to do to make my plan work? Now, I was glad to say that she didn't need to go back to work. She could stay retired, and we were able to make changes. So my message is that we all need to look at how we can make the most of what we got. I met with another couple a few days ago. Actually, it was yesterday, and they had been referred to me by an existing client, and we put their plan together. I shared with them in order for them to achieve their desired goals, they'd have to work longer. And they said, well, you know what? We don't want to do that. So we said, all right, here's what you need to do to adjust your expectations for income. If you can lower the income that you can have in retirement, we can reduce the number of years you need to work. In fact, you know what? You don't have to go back to work. The husband was going to work one or two more years. The wife was not going to go back to work. And so that worked for them. And so it's all about knowing what you need to do for retirement and setting the proper expectations. You can't have it both ways. You can't retire today and have a ton of money for income unless you've got a lot of financial resources. So it's all about that balancing act. And so that's my message for you today, is to make sure that you know what you can do, and you just think through the process and make sure you've got a plan that's not built on pie-in-the-sky assumptions. I got another guy that I met with, another gentleman that I worked with. We had put a plan together, and we talked through what his needs were going to be. And I said to him, you know, I think you need to work a little bit longer. And he said, well, how about this? How about I work part-time, or I find something that will allow me to have a certain amount of income? Can my investments, my retirement money, take care of the other half? In other words, can I have a partnership with my retirement money so that it gives me half of what I need and I'll come up with the other half myself? And of course, the answer was yes. And we worked out a plan. So a lot of times financial planning isn't, you know, here it is carved in stone and you got to do it this way. The job of a financial planner is not to dictate or to say you can't afford this or you can't afford that. It's to say, here's what you need to do, or here's how you can get where you want to go, or here's what's realistic, especially given the interest rates and the lesson everyone has learned from the last decade of stock market activity, where we saw three down years at the beginning of the millennium and then another nasty 37% drop in 2008. So it's about being realistic in your expectations. It's about engaging in a planning process that you can be confident about what you're doing and recognizing that it's carved in jello, not in stone, that you set out your plan and you make adjustments. A lot of the people I work with, we make adjustments to their plan. We come back to that planning process. I need money for a car. I inherited money. I sold a house. I bought a house. I've had this happen, that happen. We come back to the plan. And so that's what planning is all about. Let's take a quick break, and I'll come back with my final segment, your two-minute warning.
Did you know living longer could be the death of your retirement? According to the U.S. Census Bureau, babies born today can expect to live until an average age of 78. Whether you're retiring today, tomorrow, or in 20 years, you must ask yourself, will your retirement plan go the distance? Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
This is your two-minute warning.
All right, here it is. You got it. The warning is, how did we get to this place in America? Rick Santorum on the Republican side. We're hearing a lot about, of course, the Republican candidates, and you know the president's obviously going to be, President Obama's going to be the Democratic nominee. So a lot of the focus is on the Republican side. So as each it's been an interesting thing. I've monitored that we've had various candidates that come up and they spike. Perry came in, he spiked, and then he went down. We saw Gingrich come up, Herman Cain come up, all of them come up, and then they kind of come back. And as they have, they, of course, have become the target of a great deal of scrutiny. Now, it's valid to scrutinize the who might be the leader of the free world, as the cliche goes. But what I've seen a distinct pattern is it's not really putting them on the radar screen for proper vetting and an evaluation of and making sure they're the right kind of person we want to run the country. But it's at more of it reminds me of more of a target on their back to be shot at, because Rick Santorum is the latest presidential candidate to be characterized by the media. Associated Press had an article out, and they went through and talked about his tax returns because he released the last 3 or 4 years. So he's the next one to be placed on the media's rotisserie spit for roasting the candidate. And basically, here's my concern, or here's the thing that we should all think about and say, is this really where we want to be? And I'm not sure quite what to do about it, other than for us to be aware. Is being successful something that disqualifies you from being president? Is that what we want? Because as we've had each person come along, you know, oh, wait a minute, here's the next dirty millionaire that we've got to say, you know, hey, how'd he make this money? And golly, he made all this money. He's got a bunch of money. He could have done it, honestly. Oh, no, heaven forbid. He's got to have done it somehow crookedly. So we have a constant drumbeat that if you've done well, you've been a politician, which Rick Santorum obviously has been. Then, well, you know, you're just another dirty Washington parasite, just like all of them. So they're all parasites. But let's pick the one that we think will do the best. And so, you know, it's exhausting. And I'm sure that you are exhausted as I am with this whole process. But I just don't get why there has to be the story isn't that the person has been successful. The story, which is crafted by the Associated Press or whatever news organization, and it's on both sides, it's not just one side, that the story to you is that don't like them, they're not relatable, they're not a good person, something wrong with them. And this keeps good people who could really help our country grow from not wanting to go into politics. I can think of one that definitely doesn't want to do it. All right. Thanks for listening and look forward to the next show.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.
You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.